covering this issue on this podcast a little bit, and that is the power shift that's taking place in the workplace in America when it comes to the worker-employer dynamic. Baby boomers are starting to age out. A lot of them are retiring. The competition for employees is getting a little more intense. I'd love your perspective, O'Brien, on this, because you've been so plugged in to the business world. It feels like young workers today have a lot more power in the equation to demand what they feel is fair in terms of compensation and where they work and how they work. I'd love your perspective on that power dynamic, and if it has changed, and what the fallout, maybe not fallout is a good word, but what the result is.
Yeah. So yes, it has changed, but I think it's changed several times over the last 100 years, right? There have been periods of time where we've had a really employee-centric market, and we've had times where we've had a really employer-centric market. And it's a pendulum that shifts back and forth. I think it'll probably continue to swing back and forth. But one thing that I don't believe is going away anytime soon is the pressure on recruiting and retention. One of the things that I have been most keyed into is the change in demographic numbers over the last 20 years and what that's going to look like on a go-forward basis. So there are a couple interesting changes in demographics that are happening. One is that our population isn't growing anymore. We are basically at replacement rate in our workforce. So while any individual company will be able to find people and attract people, the overall size of our workforce is not going to grow for the next 20 or 30 years unless we drastically change our immigration policies and allow a lot more people into the country, which might happen, but for now, it's not going to happen anytime in the immediate future. And that is having a major impact. And then you look at the racial demographics in the country, and they have skewed significantly over the last 20 years. So I can't remember the exact numbers. I had this for a presentation I did 6 months ago, but I believe it was somewhere, the Hispanic population was somewhere around 4 to 6%, like 20, 25 years ago, around 2000. And it's up near 18% right now. And it's going to cross 20% and get up to 25% in the next decade or so. And just like that shift alone is changing cultures. It is changing where employees come from, the expectations that employees have. So there's a lot of shifts. If you have an industry that is predominantly white, your talent pool is going to shrink. You are going to have to get your message out to new markets and find new pools to fish in for employees. That might be a bad analogy, but I think you get the point.
Yeah.
So those dynamics together, I think, are putting this pressure on the workforce. And I think you're starting to see it already in specific highly skilled industries. You are seeing less people going into nursing, right? There's a nursing shortage. There's a doctor shortage. There's a pilot shortage. We're seeing it in our industry. For somebody to come in and be a senior consultant in the employee benefits world, you have to have a lot of experience. You have to have spent time in our industry. So our industry is only a certain size. And as more people opt out to go do other newer things, that just limits what we can do. But I mentioned before, the complexity of what we're being asked to do has grown exponentially. So we are going to have to find ways to do our work differently, to recruit from different talent pools, all that kind of thing. I'll stop there. I feel like I'm about to be at risk of rambling, but I think that feels like the frog in the pot. It feels like the water's being heated slowly, and everybody is feeling more and more stressed, especially when it comes to recruiting and retention. And I think we're all trying to figure out what's going to make it stop. And I don't know that anything is going to make it stop. And I think we need to figure out what that then means for how we approach the work that we're doing.
Yeah. And at very least, incentive to be good and to do good, to value humanity, to be that business. You know, you talked about hygiene, you know, in the rewards and the leadership and all those other things too, that cause people to want to stay. I've worked in industries where they say that their people are our greatest asset, and they don't really walk the talk.
Yeah.
It seems like now a lot more industries are going to really embrace that idea that they really need to be good companies if they're going to keep good people.
Well, if you want people to enjoy working there, I think you're going to have to do it. And I think you'll see people overreact. I think we already have, where we want to just give people everything or listen to everything that they say and bend over backwards. And I don't think that that's healthy either, because I don't think that creates the hardy, driven, connected workforce that we want. We want people to be doing hard things. We want people to face challenges and to struggle, but we want to be supporting them and we want them to feel good about it. And we want to create a safe environment where they can fail and not feel like they are judged or their job or livelihood is going to be in jeopardy. So there, this concept of human-centric design, I think, is going to be more and more important. To the point, I probably shouldn't say this yet, but I'll tease it anyway. I'm working with your partner, Dan, and we are actually putting together a summit for 2024 where we are going to be helping people leaders build these skill sets. Something that I have really come to believe strongly is that work is going to need to be redesigned over the next 10 or 15 years, sometimes in small ways, sometimes in big ways. But I think the design thinking and the experience design skill sets are hugely valuable when it comes to solving these types of problems. And I think HR leaders are uniquely positioned to be internal consultants to their organizations. They are the people experts. So if they can build the skill set of designing better people experiences that also are more profitable experiences, if they can have that tool set or that toolkit and work internally, one, just with their own team, but also with other operational teams around the business, I think that supercharges that role and turns it into something really, really meaningful. Not that it's not meaningful now, but I just think it supercharges that role. And I would love to play a small part in helping HR leaders build that skill set. So we are in the planning process for that event right now.
That's pretty cool. Shout out to Dan Rogers, who's this podcast is the brainchild of Dan Rogers, just a great guy. He's my boss. And boy, talk about somebody who is redeeming work just in the way he structured this company and the way he treats us and values us. Just one of the most enlightened, amazing people I've ever known in my life. As you're talking through that, there's this, it's like a parent with a kid who's screaming, just give him what he wants.
Yeah.
In terms of benefits. And I'm thinking, I've been reading some articles on unlimited PTO recently. And that's a really interesting dynamic because, and I've talked to people who work in companies that have quote unquote, and I'm going to put that in hard quotes, unlimited PTO. Some of these are large tech companies. I think you can probably imagine who I'm talking about. But the reality is, it's really not unlimited PTO. But I'd love your perspective on this, because I think the idea of, hey, you take as much time as you think is fair, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like that. It's kind of like when you have a sick leave policy, like you get 15 sick days a year, and some people will call in sick exactly 15 days, whether they're not, whether they're feeling good or not.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things. I'd love your perspective on that, because that's an example of, like, 30, 40 years ago, if you mentioned the idea of unlimited PTO, people would look at you like you had three eyes. So
yeah.
Give me your perspective on that.
What we have seen with unlimited PTO is that people generally take less time off than if they have a specific set amount, because they get wrapped up in the work and there's some pressure to not abuse that, or there's pressure to continue to work. So we are seeing that it actually can have maybe not a negative effect, but in some cases a negative effect where people don't take the time off. So it's, and then of course there are people who will abuse that kind of policy, and that shouldn't be allowed either. But I do think coming up with a policy of some kind of flexibility, back to no arbitrary rules, you know, there might be a year where you want to take a big vacation and you need that extra week, and it's a meaningful birthday, or, you know, or to meaningful something, your kids are graduating and they have some extra time and they want to go to Europe and it's the once in a lifetime opportunity. Like, we should be allowing people to do that as much as we possibly can. So there should be flexibility. I this is just personal how I feel. There should be flexibility in this stuff, as much as is reasonable or as much as you can afford as a business. I think a lot of it is set arbitrarily, but I think the unlimited PTO is nice in sentiment, but it all comes down to what is the actual culture in practice. If a manager gives people a hard time when they take time off, you don't have unlimited PTO, right? If it's not a psychologically safe environment for people to take that time, then it's a useless policy.
Yeah.